An old friend of mine was an archaeology student, and she was on an archaeological dig in a trench, as you do, I don't know, whatever they do, you know, dusting things off. And then she overheard someone shout, "Why did Jesus die for me? What a wazzock!" It's quite an important question, isn't it? Jesus lived and he died, and his death has become so crucial, hasn't it? So central to Christians. So much so that this instrument of torture has now become an item of jewellery, hasn't it? It's a powerful symbol of the Christian faith. And of course, from ancient times, the crib of Christmas has been associated with the cross of Calvary. His birth closely linked to his death. We saw that even in our reading. Did you hear in verse 9? Jesus, who for a little while was made lower than the angels, so that through God's grace he should die for everyone. In other words, Jesus became a human so that he could die for everyone. But why? You know, is it just a joke or a tragedy? Does it really matter? How is it that this baby born to these kind of poor, seemingly insignificant Middle Eastern parents could die the death of a criminal and yet have so much influence and significance? Can it really make a difference to us today? Can the life and death of Jesus really change our lives? Will it make a difference to how we live in the coming week? To the people that we might see, the places we might go, the things that we're excited about, the stuff that we're not looking forward to so much? And what about beyond just the coming week? To the things that we'll face in the future? To our attitude to the big questions of life, you know, meaning, purpose, life, death? Well, the reading that we've heard this morning wants us to see the importance of Jesus living and dying for us and the difference that it can make to us today. But first, let's just underline how the reading shows us that Jesus became just like us. Perhaps you heard that as it was read. We mentioned already that he became lower than the angels. If you look down at verse 14, it tells us that he shared our human nature. And then verse 17, he had to become like his people in every way. Hebrews is again reminding us that at Christmas, God became a human being in Jesus Christ. 100% human, 100% God. Of course, there is mystery and wonder and awe to this teaching that Christians have come to call the incarnation. But it's not just for kind of academic theologians to write big dusty books about or debate till the early hours. It makes a huge difference to us. Because it means that God has come up close to us. He has entered our world and walked amongst us. He was little, weak and helpless. Tears and smiles like us he knew. And he feeleth for our sadness. And he shareth in our gladness. As the famous carol says. Do you know that today Jesus knows what your life is like? What brings you joy? What brings tears to your eyes? He's not just kind of up in heaven, like a sort of lord of the manor, watching over his servants, tending his ornamental lawn or whatever he might do. He knows and understands. And it's because Jesus is made like us that he is able to give his life for us. Remember verse 9 again. So that through God's grace he should die for everyone. He became like us so that he could die for us. He lived our life and then died our death. He wasn't just spending a few days kind of roughing it amongst the poor and helpless humans so he could experience more of what life is really like. He's not sort of a, you know, son of God on some kind of heavenly gap year. No, no. He came to live and die for us, to rescue and restore. So let's see what his living and dying can bring to us. Firstly, let's think about forgiveness and freedom. Forgiveness and freedom. Guilt and death still have a very primeval hold on us, don't they? Even with all the kind of advances of modern civilization, medicine, technology, guilt still can weigh heavily on us, can't it? We might try and ignore that or sort of psychologize it away. But when we go wrong, we feel that pang, don't we, deep in our heart. And no matter how much we try to prolong life, death eventually comes to all of us, doesn't it? And so, of course, we don't want to talk about it. We distract ourselves with happier, more comfortable things. The Bible story of guilt and death starts with a spiritual being called the devil or Satan, tempting people away from God. For God made us to look after and rule his good world, as verses 6 and 8 remind us. That's a quote from Psalm 8. But the devil's temptation led to mistrust and people turned away from God, the author of life, as we sang about in that song earlier. And of course, if you turn away from the author of life, it's not long before guilt and death enter the picture, tainting our relationships with God, each other, and our world. And our failure to trust God is what the Bible calls sin. It makes a mess. It leaves us feeling guilty and estranged from God, deserving death without him rather than life with him. And it might sound odd to our modern ears, but if you think about it, isn't it a story that we all share? We each of us prefer life our own way than God's way. We all know the damage that guilt does and the anxiety that we can face around death. But Jesus became like us and died for us to free us from this path. He purifies people from their sins, verse 11 tells us. He dies on the cross to take our guilt and shame on himself, to pay the price for it, wiping the slate clean between us and God, making us a way to be completely forgiven, cleansed on the inside. Occasionally I get stuck on those kind of YouTube rabbit warrens and watch videos on the internet of people cleaning incredibly dirty things. You know, you've got this really kind of dirty thing and then they kind of chuck it in this magic, I don't know what it is, magic solution. And then they take it out and it looks better than new. Through the cross, Jesus washes us clean. He makes us look better than new. And what's more, he welcomes us into his family. Not just that we're forgiven, it's that Jesus is not ashamed to call us family, verse 11 tells us. When we trust in him, we become a part of God's family. Jesus becomes our brother. His Father is our Father. His Spirit comes to live in our hearts. And if we are part of God's family, then we are freed from the fear of death. Not because we've paid our taxes or are particularly good people or come to church, but because of who Jesus is and what he's done. Because Jesus entered our life and our death to rescue us. His death on the cross paid the price for our mess and mistakes, and then he rose again, defeating death once and for all. Now we know from the Apostle Paul that the descendants of Abraham that are mentioned in verse 16 aren't just physical descendants, but are those who trust in the promise that was made to Abraham, that was fulfilled and became a reality in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. So we can be really confident that if we put our life in the hands of Jesus Christ, we will find forgiveness, a new family, and if we're forgiven and part of God's family, then we have nothing to fear from death. Jesus has blasted a hole right through it. He has gone before us. He promises that when we trust in him, he will keep us safe. That death will be the entrance to a new life with him, enjoying his love and life forever. The answer to our sense of guilt and fear is not to look within ourselves or to try harder or to be more generous, more kind, you know, just better next time. but to take hold of Jesus Christ. And notice he did it all for free. Verse 9 said, through God's grace, it is a gift, it is free for us to receive. So let us not be afraid to embrace him. Let us not miss out. Let us not go through life with that sense of guilt and death kind of hanging over us. Let us not go through life keeping the wonder of God's love for us at a distance, at arm's length. I meet so many people, often people who've been to church for most of their lives, and yet they feel sure that God won't accept them. And they feel so uncertain when it comes to death. We don't need to feel like that. If we know Jesus, we can know that his forgiveness is real. And it's not just for sort of vicars and the holy people, whoever the holy people are. It can be for everyone. He really has beaten death. And he will keep all who trust in him safe and secure. Jesus became like us to die for us so that we can know forgiveness and freedom. And that means too that we can receive the help and hope of Jesus Christ. We can receive his help and we can know his hope. Down in verse 17 it says that Jesus is a faithful and merciful high priest. What does that mean? Well, in Old Testament times, a priest was there to represent God to the people and the people to God. And this was done through sort of a system of rituals and animal sacrifices. And a priest was to understand and to represent your case to God. But of course, it was always just a picture. Because to truly represent someone, you need to understand just what they're like, don't you? I used to read the Bible and talk with a recovering alcoholic. And we try and explore the message of Jesus together. And I would listen and try and understand some of the struggles and some of the difficulties of his situation. But it was never the same as when our former church warden at the church I used to go to spoke to him. Because the former church warden was also a recovering alcoholic. And that meant he was uniquely placed to be able to identify that individual's problems and share Jesus with him. And perhaps in a similar sense, because Jesus is fully God and fully man, he is uniquely placed to represent us before God as our great and merciful high priest. He is uniquely placed to understand our sufferings, our doubts, our trials, our temptations. He understands, and because he understands, he can help. That's what verse 18 is all about. God knows that being there for someone is often the most important thing you can do when things are hard. And so he has come in Jesus Christ to experience our pain, to understand the ups and downs of our earthly life, to identify with our situation completely, to understand and to show overwhelming compassion and love to us. And of course, as we've said, we see this supremely, don't we? In the cross as he suffers and dies for us. So that whatever we feel today, whatever doubts, whatever questions, whatever difficulties that we are faced with, we can bring them to Jesus. He understands our weakness and pain, all the trials and temptations we face. He's with all who turn to him in faith, and he promises to help with comfort, with wisdom, with guidance. Whatever our pain, whatever our struggle, he understands. But more than understanding, he promises a new and better future. Towards the beginning of the reading, we're told that humanity was made to look after and rule God's creation. But verse 8 says, we do not, however, see human beings ruling over all things now. It goes on, but we do see Jesus. We see that he has suffered, so he understands our struggles and pains. But we see also that he has come through suffering. that he has risen again, that he is now crowned with glory and honour. And that one day he will return to fill this world with his glory. One day he will bring many children to share in it. One day there will be no need for Christ to help us in the everyday struggles of this life, because we will see him face to face. And in his glorious kingdom there will be no suffering, sin or shame. It will be done away with. Wrongs will be put right. And his family, those who've trusted in him, will reign with him forever. We will know his love and his peace perfectly. I know it can sometimes sound like pie in the sky, but if Jesus really lived, really died, and really rose again, then this is a certain hope, because it's rooted in history. And looking forward to that, that day when we will see Jesus face to face, can motivate us in the here and now. Can help us to keep trusting him, whatever we might be faced with. Can help us to keep on showing and sharing his love. You see, Jesus became just like us to die for us, so that we can be forgiven. So that we can be freed from the fear of death. So that we can be helped as we walk through this broken world with him. And that we can have the hope of God's glorious kingdom, being with Jesus, knowing his love forever. Why did Jesus die? What a wazzock. You know, my friend in that archaeological trench, when she heard those words, it changed her life. She'd actually been meeting with a friend. She wasn't herself a Christian, but her friend was. And her Christian friend had been sharing her faith with her, bringing her along to church and other events and so on. And so she'd heard about some of the things that we've heard about Jesus today. And as she heard that guy shout, "Why did Jesus die? What a wazzock," she realised that he wasn't a wazzock. He's not an accident from history or a joke. She began to realise that he really matters. That he really died for her. That he really loved her. That he really rose again for her. And it wasn't long after that that she became a follower of Jesus herself. Maybe you're here today and you need to consider if Jesus can make the same difference to you. Do you keep coming along to St. Saviour's and finding out more? Do you ask me if you've got questions? Or perhaps, as I've been retelling that story of my friend, you can think of a friend or a family member or a neighbour who needs to hear of this forgiveness, freedom, help and hope that Jesus Christ offers. Why not use the opportunity of this Christmas to invite them along to hear more of this wondrous King who came to live and die for us? Why don't we take a moment to pray for them and for us now? Let's take a